Monster Man, special episode, Monster Roulette 2. I might stop keeping track of these. I have a suspicion there's going to be a lot of them. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode, brought to you by the generosity and public spirit of my Patreon backers, and in particular, of Patreon backer Gerald. If you'd like to be like Gerald and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get access to the rewards for all other tiers, including all new episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So, Gerald, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Now, you may have heard me say at the beginning that this is a Monster Roulette episode. For reasons that are too both complex and boring to go into, I needed to change up the recording schedule of the specials, and because Gerald requested a Monster Roulette episode, and because Monster Roulette episodes are essentially zero prep episodes, I have bumped him up the queue a little bit. Hope nobody minds. It just makes the sequence of researching and recording a little bit easier for me because I'm working on one. And the research is taking a little bit longer than I'd anticipated, which is fine. But I didn't want to leave you without an episode in the meantime. So Gerald has asked me to do a Monster Roulette episode, and he's asked for it to be themed. So we're going to put a little bit of a twist on this monster. Specifically, Gerald says that he wants the monster to be air themed because that relates to the part of his campaign his players are about to get into. So they're doing some stuff that's related to the kind of elemental plane of air. He also described the creatures as aliens, in quotes. So this idea that the PCs are going to encounter these in a kind of like alien abduction storyline. And calling them aliens made me think of Silent Legions. So Silent Legions is a game from Sine Nomine Games, which is to say that it's a game from Kevin Crawford. You may know him as the creator of games like Stars Without Number. I ran a long campaign of his game, Other Dust. I don't know anything about Kevin Crawford. I don't know Kevin personally or anything like that, but I'm a big fan of the setting generation tools in his games. I've never run Silent Legions, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't think I am ever going to run Silent Legions, but if you play horror games, especially modern horror games, I feel like this is just such a useful resource. It has a lot of great setting and plot creation tools. In the same way that I recommend if you run science fiction games, you should probably check out Stars Without Number, even if you're never going to run Stars Without Number. I would say that that is really where Kevin Crawford's games shine. He has given a lot of thought to creating settings, sort of sandboxes, that have a lot of richness and depth, but with relatively little effort. Definitely something that I've discussed previously. So quote-unquote monsters in Silent Legions are pretty straightforward things. Basically, you take a basic template and then you stick some twists on it. There's really only like a limited number of monster niches, but then you dress it up a bunch. But for our purposes, what we're going to use are the alien creation tables. And these are tables that are for generating alien races that have been kind of like infiltrating the modern world for a bit. And we're going to do this set of tables, but we're going to then put our airy fantasy spin on it. And we may dial back some of the eldritch horror. I want my alien beings here to be like weird and enigmatic rather than necessarily horrifying. But so I've got my Silent Legions book right here. I've got it open. I've got my sort of parameters that I'm going to air everything up in mind. Let's start rolling some dice. So the first table asks us, how long have they been here? Again, this is more relevant to modern kind of X-Files-y settings, but let's see what we get. 4, only for the past one or two centuries at most. So these are recent arrivals in the prime material plane. Okay, next we're going to find out why people don't know they're here. And we get a 9. Their major works are all elsewhere in the solar system. So these are creatures from a remote place that have been brought here for some purpose, or maybe they made some deal just with the people that are employing them, but mostly they're not found, right? So these are some beings from another plane, beings from another dimension, which makes sense. Next, we're going to roll for their greatest remaining work. So this is the idea that they've influenced the course of human development. Obviously, this is very Lovecraftian. I don't know whether we're going to keep this for our Fantasy Air Monsters. And I got a 7. Automated servants created in a former age. There might be something here. We might come back to this. I'm going to stick this in the pocket, automated servants of a former age, and maybe roll again to see if I get anything else. This time I got a selection of alien technology kept by human heirs. I don't think that fits with a couple of centuries things. So we'll keep the possibility of automated servants, that they have some kind of, you know, robots or drones or whatever, you know, maybe to enter environments that they can't survive in. And maybe there was some previous contact with these beings by mortals. And maybe some existing type of monster is actually their automated servant. Where did they come from? I rolled a 3, and I got they are natives of this solar system, but terribly different. So we'll say maybe natives of this plane, but terribly different. So if they are airy creatures, then perhaps they can only exist like at certain altitudes, or they can only exist under certain conditions, which would explain why they have automated servants, right, who kind of like go and explore. So maybe they're creatures for whom like the upper altitudes are their native habitat, and for them, anything like lower down toward ground level is like if we were to go into like the Marianas Trench or something like that, right? So we send down all kinds of like drones and submersibles, but everything that we do down there, we require a ton of life support, or, you know, we use remote proxies. So maybe that's what they are for us, right? They dwell among the clouds. Okay. What do they think of humans? And here we're going to extend mortals, humanoids. I got a 2. Humans are meat tools to be shaped and used as needed. So again, maybe from their like remote perspective, humans don't really seem like people to them. I like that idea. So, you know, we have this kind of like up in the clouds, right? The 10,000 foot view, more than 10,000 feet. I don't know. I like that idea. So from way up high, everybody seems kind of puny and remote to them. So they don't really think of humans as people. And so they just use them if needed, but they're not really interested in relating to them. Next, we've got, what did they influence? What aspects of our society do they influence? Doesn't necessarily need to be anything, but we'll see if we get something we like. And I got an 11. The climate, they changed or are changing it to suit them. Okay, what if they're aeroforming the world? Like, what if that's their goal? You know, they can't survive in our habitat, but, you know, what if they would like to change our habitat to be one they can survive in? So now we have this question of, like, why did their influence end? Again, this is to do with the idea that alien races are an ancient secret in these games. Here, I think I might like it to not end. I might like it to be a goal that they have in future rather than something that happened in the past. But let's see what we get on the roll and just see if anything comes up that we like. I got a 4. They accomplished their purpose and had no other goal. I don't know about this because, you know, I think in my mind, I already like the idea that they are unable to access some parts of the prime material plane. Like there are some like lower altitudes they can't get to. We could maybe have this be a division within their people. I may have edited out the sound of me scratching my chin for a moment there. Maybe we could have this be a division within their people, right? So that there are some of them who think like, oh, well, we made these cloud castles. We're happy up here. You know, we ride the winds and bask in the sunshine in the cold upper air. Why would we need to go down and conquer like the dark lower reaches of this planet, you know, where the air is so thick and the pressure is so great? And there are others who want to expand. You know, maybe they're frustrated with how all the cloud castles are taken or whatever. So instead of saying like they have finished their task, perhaps they're debating whether they finished their task. I think that's more interesting. Okay, so next we begin to, so those are the grim histories of the alien species. Next, we're going to ask, how directly involved are they with humanity? I'm very tempted to think that they're not very involved at all, but we'll see how the roll goes. Well, this says, too, they live apart from humans but go among them at times. I think it might be very difficult for them to physically go among them at times. I wonder if maybe they have some kind of, like, mental projection ability where they can, you know, send their mind into a human, especially someone that they catch at higher altitudes. So like your mountaineers or your, you know, experimental aeronauts or whatever might wind up being abducted by these cloud creatures and then, you know, come back different. And those are like the proxies that these people use to scry on those who dwell at lower depths. Now we're going to see what their advantage is. What do they got that helps them in any conflict with people. It says two here, sorcery. They are versed in black magic. Okay, well, that tracks with the idea that they create these, you know, machines that go down into our world, and also that they might have mental projection abilities. Okay, great. Now we've got, why are they in this region? So why are they where they are? Why are they in the place that the players are going to encounter them? I rolled and got an 8. They gain nourishment from places of eldritch power. I wonder if that is a kind of like resource competition thing. You know, magic works differently in different worlds. So since we are creating a creature for Gerald's game, I don't know whether we have this idea of like places of magical resource, but I do like that there might be these kind of sacred sites, these holy mountains or whatever, or even like certain astrological conjunctions that they gain more power from because they're like up in the sky closer to them. Obviously in the real world, being a little bit higher in the atmosphere doesn't put you meaningfully closer to the stars, but you can see them better, right? Because the air is clearer, you know, there's less distortion. So I wonder if there's something there, you know, maybe it's a starlight thing. Next, what do they fear? So what is it that, you know, these are alien beings, not gods, right? There's something that they're afraid of. We've got sorcerers. Some cult or archmage seeks their ruin. So somebody knows about them and is after them, maybe to harvest their power, maybe to learn their secrets of technology or mental transference, or maybe just to eliminate what's regarded as a potential threat. And I like the idea, again, just because somebody is after these aliens who have infiltrated human society, that doesn't necessarily mean that somebody is like a good person. Think about The Whisper in Darkness, where Akeley, or like quote-unquote Akeley, says that the Amigo are threatened by a secretive cult. It says, you will know what I mean when I say that they're connected to Haster and the Yellow Sign. How do they control their minions? So again, we've kind of already got the idea that their minions are sort of magical, but we'll roll the dice anyway. Let's see what we get. Oh, magic. Okay, number 5, magic. Their minions abound with sorcerous rites. So that's in keeping with what we've established. So they are either mentally projecting into human beings or other humanoids, mortals, or they are remotely magically controlling their devices. What values do they admire? I like this. Again, one might think it's a little simplistic, but on the other hand, that still makes it less simplistic than how most D&D monsters are presented, right? So let's see. And again, we don't have to keep these if we don't want to. If they wind up being like, these guys seem quite cool and remote, and if we wind up getting something a little more ferocious, then I might reroll. 8. Debasement and defilement of those beneath them. I don't know, it feels a little emotional of these guys. Maybe. So maybe there's an idea that this sort of like confirms their prejudices. If they're very like detached and ascetic, and they think that, you know, they are literally above it all and all of the mortals are down there grubbing in the muck and being filthy and nasty, maybe when they see that, it sort of confirms their prejudices. So they like to get people to be corrupt and dishonest and just interested in their own gain or their own like crude physical needs, because that helps them justify what they're doing, right? Like, oh, we detached aerial intellectuals would never do something like this. And then what values do they despise? We got a 9, human technology. They loathe human science and its fruits. I think, you know, for a fantasy game, obviously, we could include certain types of magic in that. So maybe they hate, you know, maybe they think it's a threat. Maybe they think that, you know, humans are eventually going to come up and like conquer the upper air where they dwell. Or maybe they just think, maybe it clashes with their idea. You know, maybe it clashes with their stereotype of humans as brutish, like, oh, look at them eating and drinking and having children. It's revolting. And then they see them like, oh, working on challenging intellectual pursuits. Like, well, wait a minute, that doesn't seem like something a swamp monkey would do. Uh-oh. So maybe they're particularly opposed to that. Okay, now we're gonna take a look at their physical form. Again, my temptation is to have them be kind of cloudy or like wispy and ethereal, but we'll see what we roll. So we're gonna roll some d20s. Some d's 20. It says they're amoeboid. We kind of were amoeboid last time. Let's roll again. No, it says they're humanoids. Upright humanoids. Okay, fine. I don't want to roll for animal types and characteristics. Although, maybe, well, you know what? Let's just see what we get. I got a 16 squid tentacles, beaks, eyes, ink, color changing. I like the idea of color changing. I like the idea that they might kind of like blend in against the sky behind them. Like if you think about the protective coloration of animals, which often have like one side that blends into the ground and one side that blends into the sky. That's a possibility, or the sea or whatever, you know what I mean? Okay. I like the color changing. We can maybe even give them tentacles. Like, I feel like that's a, you know, pretty on brand for, what's that story about the tentacle things in the clouds that grab the aviator? Anyway, whatever. And let's see, we'll roll on other growths and just see what we get. Two weeping sores. Nah, I don't feel like that's these guys. I feel like they're a bit more ethereal than that. Then there are some tables for different body parts, arms or legs, hands or feet, head, skin, torsos, mouths, tentacles. I think we've got, they've got color shifting skin. They've got tentacles. I feel like we're good. Let's go on to additional traits. So here we've got a D10 table with some different categories on it. So maybe it has a special manner of feeding, a voice or call, a way that it moves, or a hunting style. I don't think the manner of feeding is relevant. I think, you know, if they live in the clouds, they kind of like suck moisture out of the air and like gain nutrition from the sun. But let's see about a voice or call. I like that idea. 10, crystalline chiming. Yeah, okay, I think that fits, right? That they maybe communicate over long distances with this kind of like ringing sound. How about the way it moves? Let's do one more. 9, leaping and bounding. Well, that would make sense, right? If they travel between clouds, they can kind of like spring. Maybe they, all right. I like that idea. They're sort of, it makes sense if they have access to some kind of air magic. They might make it easier for themselves to jump and glide between the clouds where they live. Okay. And then we got optional special abilities. I'm just going to roll a couple of times on this table and see what we get. Maybe don't use any of them. Maybe we'll use some. First up, I rolled a 40. They burrow through the earth. No, that's definitely not it. How about a 17? They have a toxic stinger or claw. Well, maybe they have like some kind of poison that they can apply by lashing with the tentacles. If they are kind of alien abductors, then maybe it could be a tranquilizer. I feel like that would make sense. 70 gives me they keep functioning D4 rounds after reaching 0 hit points, refusing to die as terrestrial things do. Sure, maybe, you know. I feel like that's a pretty good alien thing. Okay, so that's all the random tables. Let's start putting this all together. So I feel like if the players encounter them directly, they should be in some kind of like protective clothing that essentially they would be in like a deep sea diving suit. If you think about an old timey, were those ever really called Iron Dukes, or is that just from a video game? There was a like a Flash game where you played kind of steampunk deep sea, you fought like sea monsters and things in your like steampunk submarine, and your deep sea diving suit was called the Iron Duke. Anyway, whatever. I think they definitely have old timey deep sea diving suits or like bathyspheres, you know? And they lower them down from the clouds. I think that's kind of whimsical. We don't want to go too far with the whimsy. I don't know if you've ever played Age of Sigmar or seen the models for it, but they have these like sky dwarves. They fly around in skyships and they're very kind of like pseudo-Victorian. If you think of kind of the old Warhammer dwarves sometimes had like the iron masks on their helmets that looked like a bearded face. Well, there's one of these that has that, but it's got like a curly mustache and a monocle, and he has a top hat. And, you know, he's got a balloon attached to his back. I love this idea of this dwarf that descends from his skyship with a balloon on his back and a harpoon gun shooting down at people on the ground. What ho! Another rapscallion from my menagerie. That's funny, but I don't think it's these guys. I think these guys should be alien. And, you know, one of the ways to communicate alienness is to represent how alien our world is to these creatures. That they don't know what's going on. Lovecraft does this very well with the dissections in At the Mountains of Madness. And I feel like these guys are a little bit the same. They almost feel like detached scientist types. So whatever villain or human antagonist is colluding with them, communicates with them through these crystalline chimes. So maybe there's some kind of like specialized chime apparatus somewhere in the bad guy's castle or dungeon or whatever that can communicate with these aerial beings. And then they like lower down in their deep sea diving suits to talk, or they send one of their possessed humans or drones. So I feel like maybe what you get is a couple of these drones a bunch of, well, probably not that many. They probably don't have that many possessed humans, right? Because it makes sense that it'd be very rare that someone would stray into the territory where these creatures could physically grab them. So they would only do it for special people, right? I don't think they're amassing a cult. I think they're a few people who are like, oh yeah, that guy's got the mountain sickness or whatever, right? So you have maybe like their human cat's paw, and then most of the muscle are drones. And then once they've grabbed the PCs, then the creatures come down in the deep sea diving suit and they like put a suit on you so you can survive at their cloudy altitude, and off they go up into the clouds. And maybe it's like an Algernon and Blackwood Wendigo type of situation where you're up there in the sky on this weird, horrific journey. And then, you know, if they've been asked to take you to the villain's lair, then you kind of wind up there. And you could set this up in advance by having other people where they just like disappeared and then they reappeared somewhere else. That's not going to sound as uncanny as it would be in our world. You know, in a D&D world, it's just like, oh, they disappeared and reappeared somewhere else. Yeah, I mean, we know that teleportation exists. This can sometimes cut against, you know, the ubiquity of the supernatural can sometimes cut against its specialness. I was once in a vampire game. I was playing a character who was not a vampire, right? I was a ghoul, a vampire's assistant. But I wasn't even really that. I was completely new and I didn't know very much about the thing. So a couple of sessions in, this is a LARP, we're at a gathering of vampires. And it's been held, as is the custom, in like a place of beauty. And this is this mausoleum. This is a real place that was kind of like a tourist attraction, I guess. And we are standing guard, right? So I and my colleagues, so like my friends and I all joined the game together. And we all played these ghouls. And we're just kind of like keeping an eye on things. And the people running the game start kind of like flitting about the area where we are, like knocking things over or, you know, doing strange stuff. And the idea is obviously supposed to be that this place is haunted, right? So we are just here trying to do our jobs, but there's a ghost and we don't know what to do. But the problem is that we know that vampires can turn invisible. So we just think like someone's messing with us. So the presence of the supernatural, like the ubiquitous supernatural in the game, kind of argued against the atmosphere that the people running the game were trying to create, which was, you know, we were genuinely at this spooky old place, and the idea of something moving on its own would be really creepy if it weren't for the fact that we were already in a game where we were supposed to be the creepy ones, I guess. Anyway, my point is, the more ubiquitous your magic in a D&D world, the more, like, the shopkeeper casts prestidigitation to dust the shelves, the less this kind of stuff seems strange and weird. But I think the idea that these people like live way up in the clouds and occasionally they like come down and fish someone up from our world, and the idea of the deep sea diving suit thing, you know, especially if you can link that to the drone, like let's say you've seen these constructs previously and then you see another one, but it looks kind of fancier and weirder. And then it opens up and this weird squid person gets out of it. I think there's definitely something there. Also, nice to see something that has tentacles and whatever, but it's not aquatic. Squid people coming down from the clouds in deep sea diving suits to fish people up and take them. However, in this case, they are doing it for some kind of human patron, I guess. But also, they're kind of on the lam from a cult. You know, maybe a cult of humans who want to take to the stars. You know, they also want to get this power. Or maybe a cult of humans who are devotees of some chthonic earth power and they hate these cloud pirate guys and they just want to take them out. I don't think they should have a name. You know, I think we should let the PCs name them. They should just have a name that's nothing but like some crystalline chiming. And the humans who contact them should call them, you know, friends in high places or something like that. You know, they should like euphemistically refer to them. Friends in high places, is that a bit on the nose? I think it's funny. I think if you say like, I've got friends in high places, and then later on, you find that he's got allies that literally come down from a cloud, and you're like, oh, friends in high places, I get it. I think there's something there. So Gerald, we've got weird squid people descending from the clouds in their deep sea diving suits to kidnap unsuspecting humans, you know, putting them to sleep with their tranquilizing touch and whisking them away into the upper air. And I think that's something. I think that's probably something. So I hope that that inspires something fun for your game. And I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Everyone else, if you'd like to be like Gerald and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. In our next episode, we're going to be taking a look at another listener-requested monster. Well, is monster the word? We're going to be taking a look at another listener-requested legendary figure, and I hope that you will join me for that right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.